Thank you. I'll do a quick roll call for you. Good morning, good afternoon, good evening to everyone. On today's PPSC PDP call on Thursday, the 19th of August, we have Jeff Newman, James Bladel, David Maher, Paul Diaz. From staff, we have Marika Konings, Margie Milam, Liz Gaster, and Glenda Saint-Géry, and Gisela Gruber-White, myself. Today, we have apologies from Avery Doria and Gabriel Pinero, and Alex Kakura will be joining us shortly. We're just dialing out to him. Thank you. Over to you, Jeff.
Great. Thank you very much. This is Jeff Newman, chair of the Policy Development Process Work Team. As Gisela said, it's August 19th. Our regularly scheduled meeting, that our last meeting was 2 weeks ago. And I know this is August, so it's a time of vacations, and you know a lot of people are going to be in and out for the next few weeks. I appreciate everyone making the time to call in. I did get a note from Marilyn who said that she was going to be on the call, so I'm hoping she will eventually join. So I think today, and you know, I'm not sure how long this call will go, but today the agenda I wanted to go through was to go over the different options as far as timelines to get towards a final report and what the different options that Marika has put together that we could go through and talk about, each requiring a different level of effort. And then I thought we would just jump into another document. Sorry, did someone just join or? So then I thought we would jump into another document that's been posted on the wiki, which is the public comment tool that was put together, which I think is a really great document of organizing the comments that so far came in. I will say that since the last call and even since that tool document, the public comment tool document was posted from Marika, the registry stakeholder group did get in its comments yesterday on the initial report, and that too is a pretty extensive document on a number of issues. So that public comment tool document will be updated with the registry stakeholder group and with any other comments that we eventually gave that eventually come in. If you remember on the last call, we decided to extend the public comment period, and we didn't put a drop-dead date on there for good reason. We basically said that comments would be most helpful if received by August 31st. So that's currently the schedule. If comments come in after, then we'll try to consider them if we can. But we haven't put that drop-dead date on there. Any questions so far? Okay, with that said, if you look on Adobe right now, there is, and I'm hoping everyone's on Adobe that's on the call, there are two options that are on there for timelines. I think the first one is a super aggressive timeline, and the second one is still aggressive, but not quite as aggressive. And so if we could go through that, the first option would be for delivering a final report to the PPSC, the steering committee, by Cartagena. This would probably require us to meet on a twice-a-week time frame. And I think, you know, that's very aggressive. I think there are a lot of other groups meeting, and even getting people's attention for once a week is difficult enough. But it is an option. And under that option, we would basically be striving to develop a draft final report by the 30th of September, and then getting public comments for about a month, reviewing those comments for a couple weeks, and then finalizing the report and delivering it to the PPSC by November 15th, which is the publication deadline for the Cartagena meeting. That would be option one. Option two, a little bit more realistic, but still, I think, aggressive, is getting the updated report, an updated report by September 27th, and reviewing the updated report for about a month period until the 21st of October, developing a final report or draft final report by October 29th, getting public comments on a draft final report through the end of November, and then kind of a review of public comments, discussion of next steps in Cartagena, and then a finalization of the report to deliver to the PPSC in the early next year timeframe. That would still require us to meet on a once-a-week basis. And so putting those two options, you know, I personally believe that option two is more realistic, even though option two is aggressive as well. But I wanted to, rather than just making that unilateral decision, just run those two options by you and see if you guys had an opinion that differs from mine. So any comments or questions? Okay, James.
Yeah, Jeff, thanks for putting together these options. I'm always going to gravitate towards the one that gets this in our rearview mirror as quickly as possible, and I understand that option one is aggressive. The only other thing that I would point out, I think it's addressed in option two, but not option one, is that we've seen, I think Belgium was the perfect example of why, interim or final reports or documents being posted for public comment shouldn't really fall immediately before or immediately after an ICANN general meeting, because it seems like they certainly suffer for lack of attention for that. And I think that that is addressed in option two as opposed to option one. Would you say that's correct? That's how the comment periods and publication dates fall?
Yeah, I think certainly option two would avoid the influx of pre-ICANN meeting, asking for comments pre-ICANN meeting, and certainly not immediately after as well. I think certainly option two has more of that flexibility, and certainly will. I see option one being incredibly aggressive, such that I would see deadlines having to be extended by that. But Marika's got a comment.
Yeah, this is Marika. Of course, one option the group could consider as well in the option two version is to use the Cartagena meeting, like we also did in the previous meeting in Brussels, as a way of presenting the report. And maybe we can be a little bit more aggressive about it, because I think we had some challenges in Brussels where there were conflicting meetings. We didn't have great attendance, but maybe going out, for example, on constituency day, for example, and trying to get a slot at the different meetings, trying to really get people focusing on this and using that as a way to get public comments, and then, of course, it would mean extending the deadline for public comments beyond the Cartagena meeting with sufficient time, taking into account, holidays coming up and people having sufficient time. But if we really feel that we need to, basically drag people out there and look at it and focus on it and get comments, that might be an alternative approach in getting people engaged in this.
Yeah, and we also need to consider there were a lot of issues that we put out for comment that we didn't have any recommendations on in this report. And to the extent that we fill those in now or during this time period, those are going to be issues that are new to people as far as our recommendations. So keeping that in mind, we certainly want to give opportunity for those at the next ICANN meeting to comment on before we give it to the PPSC. And there were additional issues that came up that either weren't in the report at all that have come up through some experience with the Vertical Integration Working Group, for example, that we just have never considered. And we may want to put those or make recommendations in this report that people will be seeing for the first time. James, you have another comment?
Yeah, just I don't disagree with what you're saying. I just maybe perhaps a little discouraged to realize that we're truly that far away, even given the new materials and topics that were raised in Brussels. And I would caution against perhaps adjusting our work on the fly based on what's going on in other areas of ICANN. I think that sometimes that's really beneficial, but I think that, that also could possibly give us the recipe for something that really never ends.
Right. I absolutely hear what you're saying. So
I mean, this is a periodic, this is an ongoing process, right? I mean, once we get this PDP behind us, I'm sure it won't be too long before someone will propose that we revisit and review the process again. So I'm not real concerned necessarily about, you know, finding a good and meaningful place to saw off, you know, the addition of new information and new topics for consideration and then just finishing what we have. I don't know. I'm sorry. I'm recognizing that 2011 is going to bring a lot of brand new challenges, and I certainly would like to have this one in the rearview mirror before we enter a new year.
Yeah, I hear what you're saying, and you know what? We'll leave this timeline for people to think about for the next week or so. But just recognize that when Marika and I were talking about this, that we really think option one would call for two calls a week. And I'm not sure, you know, like I said, it's hard enough to get people for once a week on these calls. Having two calls a week, I'm not sure we're going to get the participation that we may need. But again, so I didn't want to make a decision for this group, and so I'm glad you're making those comments, James. Marika, you have another comment?
Yeah, this is Marika, and something we discussed as well in our pre-discussion is that it's important for the group to take into account as well, once this group is done with its work, it's not the end of the story. Then it will move to the PPSC, and if the PPSC takes a similar approach as it's done now, for example, for the working group guidelines, it means that the PPSC will look at the recommendations, probably come up with a list of issues where they feel that, you know, or they want to ask the PDP work team to give it further consideration, or where they might not agree, and give certain issues back to the PDP work team to look at again, which might, you know, require a number of back and forth between the PPSC and the PDP work team. Once that group has finished its process, which I guess will take some time, might involve as well some public comments if there's changes to the document, then it will need to go to the GNSO Council, which will also have its process of reviewing the document and discussing. Then you'll have a process as well where all this will need to be incorporated. We probably need to develop this, the rules of procedure that go with it, all the bylaw changes, which then we'll have to go through further public comments and as well board discussion. So before we actually get to the end stage, you know, we're still quite far away. So, I'm very aware as well that, you know, the longer we take in within this group, the further the endpoint moves away as well. So, you know, is there any ideas or suggestions on how we could, you know, speed up the process? And indeed, one of the suggestions in the option one scenario would be to move indeed to biweekly calls, which, you know, I realize might not be realistic seeing, you know, the workload and all the other efforts that are going on. But, you know, if anyone has any other suggestions on how we can move the process forward and still being, you know, diligent and you know, making sure we cover all the bases, that will be helpful.
Okay, I'm going to go to Alan and Paul, and then I kind of try to move this forward a little bit, see if we can reach a resolution right after that. So, Alan?
Yeah, biweekly calls are fine for when a group is in a sprint to make a specific deadline and can't go on for more than a month or something like that. It's just not tenable. Even once a week calls, I don't know about the rest of you, I don't do all my reading and don't keep up with the email. I barely do, if I'm lucky, just before the meeting, and often even that doesn't happen. If we go to biweekly calls, I'm afraid you know people are going to drop off either this thing or something else they're doing, or simply only make every second call. I just don't think that's tenable, and if that means it drags into 2011, as Marika said, it's going to anyway. I just don't see, as much as I'd like to see it wrapped up and finished, 2 weeks, doubling the workload per week is just not going to be an acceptable answer, I think.
Okay, thanks. And Paul?
Yeah, thanks, Jeff. Just want to express total support for what Alan said. A biweekly would be difficult, especially as we already have these scheduled for 90 minutes. I personally would have a very hard time. I try and have good attendance for the once a week, but don't know if I can carve out another 90. I actually had a question for you, Jeff, before we start looking at which of the two options we're going to support. can you please explain what is the current status of the PPSC as a group? I was under the impression that there's some question about membership and whatnot. Just help us understand, is that group fully constituted? Are they basically prepared for whatever we present them or the people in place? And could you give us some sense, if you have any, how much time they may need to go over things? The timeline that Marika laid out for us, I think, is very realistic. But at the same time, it's kind of daunting because that means that this group is probably going to go really well into 2011 with a back and forth at PPSC level, GNSO level, any
right.
additional requirements they levy on us.
So
if you could just help explain.
Yep, sure. The PPSC is a fully constituted group. I won't say that everybody shows up, but it does have a one or more representatives, one official representative and one alternate representative from each of the, I will say, constituencies, because it was based on that as opposed to stakeholder groups. And so, yes, it's fully constituted. We reaffirmed that those were the right participants several months ago. The PPSC met for the first time in a while in, Brussels. And during that meeting, we decided that the procedure we would follow would be to review. This was for the working group work team report. We each reviewed the working group work team report. We've had two calls since where the procedure that was decided was to see if there were any issues that we all felt were not addressed or that we still had questions on in the working group work team report. The PPSC came up with a list of, I believe, four or five issues that it's now in the process of confirming that the group agrees that these are the issues that we think should be referred back to the working group work team. They will be referred back to the working group work team by the 1st of September. And the working group work team, we've talked to the chair of the working group work team, who believes that, you know, there's so few issues, some of them which they've already discussed. In previous calls, when, you know, even before their final report came out, and it's their impression that they would take less than a month to talk through those, write those up, address them, and submit it back to the PPSC. Hopefully, the PPSC will be satisfied with those answers and then forward that on to the council, included with the final report. So. That's the procedure for the working group work team. It's been made very clear to the working group work team that our job is not to reopen issues that were resolved by the work team, that it wasn't another place to work through all of the issues again. It's not intended to do that. And the PPSC has accepted that and has moved forward based on that assumption. So moving that forward to this group, again, the goal would be that the PPSC would review the PDP work team final report, would look to see whether there is any outstanding issues that were not addressed that they felt should be addressed, and again, then would refer those back to the PDP work team. The PPSC is not there to resolve those issues, but to just point them out, and depending on the level of issues and if any changes are made, there may be a public comment period after the work team comes back with its recommendations. So that, in general, is the process. I can't tell you how long that will take because I don't know if we're going to resolve every issue in our final report, at least to the PPSC's satisfaction. It's a different group of people, so it's kind of hard to say. But the group is constituted and is meeting.
Sorry, Jeff, I somehow can't turn my hand on. Can I speak?
I have James and David, and then I'll go to you, Marilyn.
Okay, thanks.
James?
Hi, Jeff. And, I just wanted to agree with Alan that twice a week meetings are unsustainable in the long run. I'm just a little taken aback by Marika's laying out of the road ahead. I don't doubt her for a minute that it's accurate, but it's really just a little shocking to think that this effort is going to last probably until mid-2011, if we're lucky. One thing I would like to raise is, in lieu of twice-a-week meetings, perhaps on a monthly basis, we could schedule a half-a-day call, a four-hour call, or some more marathon telephonic sessions to really, really charge through this work. I think that might be a preferred alternative than trying to find another 90 minutes every week if we just had these, event-type calls where we could, try to push through some of these remaining items and drive towards Cartagena. Thanks.
Yeah, thanks for the suggestion, James. I'm going to go to David dropped his hand, so Marilyn.
Thanks. Listen, I'm looking at the members of the PPSC, and actually, I was interested in your view that they're meeting and working, but I'll come back to that. I'd like to support James' suggestion. It's probably easier for me to find a three-hour session occasionally than it is to find a regular session twice a week. And I know I am the lowest on the totem pole since I'm only here sporadically, but in order to be here, I'm just commenting on, I do think twice a week is the last twice. I just don't know that it's going to be possible. A lot of the people on this call are active in other groups as well.
Okay, so you know what? After this call, Marika, let's you and I sync up and see if we can come up with some suggested times for a doodle poll for doing a longer session once, in September, once in October, and once in November, I guess, and see if there's a way that could speed along the schedule. So why don't we take that offline to see whether that's feasible. Alan, you have a comment on that?
No, I support that concept. I'll just an anecdote. If any of you are involved in the RAA revision processes, the GNSO early last year said we're going to charter a whole bunch of groups or design team, whatever, and do something by July 31st. The interim report for that document, for that result, not the final, was presented in Brussels almost a year late. There's no point in setting completely unrealistic time frames. So as unpalatable as long time frames are, unrealistic ones just make even less sense.
Okay. So why don't we take that back, and Rick and I will look at some times that we think are that don't conflict with some other groups and see if we can send out a doodle poll on some available times. Marilyn, you had a comment on the PPSC. I think for a minute there, Marika had the composition posted. Was there a question you had on that, or should we just move on?
Well, I do have a question about it. I mean, it's got the composition on the PPSC is basically, as you said, one per constituency with an alternate. What is it they're continuing to meet on right now?
Right now, their role is to review the working group work team report.
Okay.
With the goal of submitting it to the council.
Okay. Thank you. That's helpful. Thanks.
Okay. So, Alan, is your hand raised again, or
sorry, I didn't lower it. I will.
Okay, that's fine. All right. So let's move on to some substance here. I said at the beginning of the call, we now have, I think it's five comments or four? One of them is a question, but four substantive sets of comments that we've received so far. We've received the ALAC statement, the INTA Internet Committee statement, the Registrar Stakeholder Group, and the Registries Stakeholder Group comments. Again, comments are not the comment period has been extended with what we said, comments most helpful by the 31st. So we hope to get more comments in by the end of the month. Hopefully, Marilyn, maybe your commercial or business constituency, hopefully we'll be submitting comments. Hopefully we'll get some comments from the non-commercials. Even if it's on a rolling basis, if we can get some comments in from those groups, that would be very helpful. What we've been doing, we being Marika, who's done a fantastic job even though she's on vacation, has been doing is to populate a review tool, which you now see up on Adobe, which goes through the general issues, the comment that, kind of a summary of the comment that was received by a particular group, and then the identification of the group that submitted the comment in the next column. Our goal is to go through each of these to see whether we should respond, but what our response to that comment may be, and if that calls for a recommended action or change. So we can, it's perfectly acceptable if we think the working group's considered it and doesn't necessarily want to adopt that change that's recommended. We certainly could do that, but we should, as part of being required to respond to each of the comments that have come in. So that said, I want to jump actually to the first one, which is kind of an overall issue, which the ALAC raised, and I believe may have been raised in another context, and I'm forgetting where it was. But the ALAC had brought up the comment of, we have been making the assumption that the working group model is the right way to go, and we base that on, rightfully so, on the Board Governance Committee's final report on recommended changes. And so the overall question is, what, if anything, we want to do as a group with the comment that says that the work team should undertake or commission a review of whether the working group model is in fact optimal for addressing PDP issues.
Can I raise my hand? I can't raise it electronically for some reason.
Yes, I will. Yes, and let me just ask the question. If I could, before you go, Marilyn, Alan, as part of the ALAC, and maybe you weren't part of this particular comment, but so maybe I'll raise it. When this was discussed by the ALAC, was there an alternate model that was discussed, or was it just really, kind of a question out there to undertake a review?
I think it's the question out there. If the PDP bylaws mandate that the working group is the only way to address things, I and some others have some concerns that we have found, I won't say failures, but weak points in the working team discussion. And if you look at the discussion that's been held, that was initiated by Mike Rodenbach in the GNSO or in the PPSC on should work teams be able to make decisions online, on a telephone call when not everyone is present, or only do it on email, and email doesn't seem to be all that effective. One question is it really the best way to do things, where you cannot use polls because the representation may be heavily uneven, when people are deemed to be part of the working group but don't actually participate, but yet have to be considered at some level. There's enough problems that I think it's not a given that this is the absolute best way and the only one that we should be allowing. And that's the motivation.
Okay, and that was...
No, we don't have an alternative.
Okay,
maybe flexibility to allow something that we don't know about today would be more prudent.
And would that be just to clarify, would that be the same recommendation whether it applies to something that may ultimately be a capital C consensus policy? Or I guess, is there any differentiation you all made as a group?
I don't know. We didn't look at that level. Just worrying that mandating within the bylaws that a specific type of quote, working group, which is, you know, a capitalized defined term in ICANN right now, be mandated when it may not be the optimal one as we learn more about how to actually discuss and come to closure on policy.
Okay. Thanks, Alan. Let me go to Marilyn, and then I'll come back to the queue for James.
I'm going to support everything that Alan said and add a couple of comments. Historically, under the previous policy development process, task forces in some cases were required to be quote-unquote representative. I think there were some objections to that. We moved to this idea that anybody who has an opinion can be part of a working group. And I'm not being critical about anybody who has an opinion wanting to be part of a working group, but I am going to note my observation is that it's extremely difficult to have any kind of balance when a working group is totally open and people are there in their individual capacity. And I think we need to review the role of working groups and whether we need two-stage or three-stage approaches to working groups. I'm thinking in particular of a situation involving my own constituency, which has six or seven people on a working group, but they're all there in their individual capacity. That's fine, but at some point, as the chair of a constituency, when internal process develops a formal position, then I need to be able to ensure that formal position. And this is not individual to a particular constituency. I really think we need to evaluate the working group model, ask what we've learned from the months we've been using it, and assess whether there are stages to working groups, requirements at some point that there be formal advice from constituencies or stakeholder groups, or whether we don't require that. But I don't think we've thought that through, and we have a limited but probably relevant recent experience with trying working groups, and some kind of an assessment of them, I think, is relevant before we just instantiate them as the only model.
Okay, so you're talking about an evaluation by this group of the working group model. And one thing I want to note, Marika, is we should go back and figure out how this overlaps with the working group work team. And so just make sure that that's within our mandate. If it's within the working group work team mandate, then it's maybe something we raise to the PPSC as something they should ask of the working group work team.
I wasn't suggesting we do the evaluation. I was suggesting we call for it.
Okay. Let me just, all right. Thank you for clarifying that. Okay, let me go to James.
Yeah, I can probably keep this fairly short and say I support what Marilyn has said, and I definitely endorse the idea that we should call for an evaluation of whether the working group model is delivering on what the BCG had anticipated that it would provide. From my perspective, where I sit, it's kind of an endless decision deferral mechanism where it's continuously you know, working around topics, but I see very little, you know, actually becoming in the way of resolutions. Not sure what the alternative is, and I don't really think it falls to this group to find that alternative. I think a comparative evaluation with other organizations is definitely in order, and wanted to support Marilyn's call for, you know, just a review of whether or not the working group model is serving its purpose.
So Liz on the chat, and then I'll go to Alan, brings up a good point and says that, look, the working group model is a board mandate. Is there a way essentially to rework that or to make recommendations to make that a workable model as opposed to rejecting it outright? So are there things that we could recommend? For example, totally throwing this out there, that, you know, while anyone could join a working group, maybe decisions of the working group have to be made on a representative basis. Again, that's kind of throwing it out there, maybe a horrible idea, but it's those types of ideas. In other words, everyone could participate, but in the end, when the working group tries to find consensus, it must do so through a official representative basis so that constituencies get votes. Again, just totally throwing it out there, maybe horrible, but can we make suggestions like that to work on the working group model as opposed to just saying it may not be the right way to go? So let me throw it over to Alan.
Yeah, I think Liz's second statement of rather than rejecting it entirely was certainly not what I was proposing to do. The previous PDP says you shall use task forces, but gave an escape clause that if you choose not to, then you can follow some other practice. Working groups were designed to fix one specific ill of task forces, but not an attempt to preserve the strong points of task forces. I just don't want to see the PDP bylaws coming out saying thou must use the working group model, which, yes, over the years we may change the details of it. I think we need to be more open-ended and allow for new models to change and a new model to come out that we didn't think of, that we didn't have the wisdom of thinking of 3 years ago when the Board Governance Committee said thou shalt use working groups. I think we can afford to be a little bit more flexible without putting it in and casting it in concrete at this level. So I don't think we need to do the investigation or need to do the tweaking right now. I think we need to come up with something which is sufficiently flexible to allow the GNSO and ICANN, as we evolve, to use an effective mechanism.
So going down that path, so let's say we do make a recommendation that it should be more flexible to allow for other approaches, and without specifying those other approaches, because even if we came up with a few now, that probably wouldn't be flexible enough to consider other models in the future. Are there certain, and again, this is just throwing it out there and doesn't need to be answered immediately now, but are there certain principles that we would want to preserve so that no matter which method the council chose to have the work done, that there will be certain principles that have to be maintained?
I don't think we need to specify that. I think we need to specify that I don't know what word to use is the generic working group. A bunch of talking people must be struck by the GNSO according to its rules of procedure. And if the GNSO comes up with a reinvigorated task force X, or comes up with some new type of thing, it can write the rules and put it in place, and then it can choose to select it. Remember, the board has oversight over the GNSO rules of procedure. If the GNSO tries to do something totally stupid, the board could reject it. I don't think we need to. The overall GNSO procedures are simply pointed to by the bylaws.
Right.
So I don't think we need to be more specific. We need to find our good catchphrase for the generic working group task force slash committee. But
right.
but I don't think we need to do more than that.
Jeff,
I
get in the queue, sorry, but I can't raise my hand.
That's okay. So let me make a quick statement. I'll go to you, Marilyn. So I understand the flexibility that you're asking for in terms of, that you're talking about, in terms of allowing the council to be able to choose the method by which the group or policies, I'm trying to be generic too, and I understand why you're having a tough time, Alan, coming up with a word. But so the council should be free maybe in choosing the method by which the work is done, but shouldn't there be some overall principles about, you know, ensuring that whoever does or whatever does the work, you know, there's representativeness, there's, because lots of types of policies go through this process, and I think if we gave flexibility on the method but prescribed certain principles, then maybe that's the way to give the council what it needs, but also ensure that parties that are going to have to live by policies are comfortable that the process that was followed by which to make the decision was something that they're comfortable with as well. So let me go to Marilyn. And
My answer, by the way, would be yes, if we can actually come up with a set of criteria which does not end up mandating specific committee structures, yes, certainly.
Okay. I said Marilyn and Alex, yeah.
My observation is that what working groups are doing, just watching what they're doing in a couple of cases, is they're throwing out a lot of ideas, and in some cases they're exploring a lot of ideas, but they're also, in some cases, on the previous task force approach, we had some amount of bounding that happened, and I'm not going to comment on whether that was ill or health. I'm just going to say there was some amount of bounding that happened because task forces had a limited, sometimes they had a limited membership. They often also allowed a lot of observers. But what we have going on with working groups right now, I think, are a lot of exploratory work. Now, I'm not negative about exploratory work. I'm just noting that we're not necessarily getting to information, fact-based policymaking by having 75 people who have opinions and interest on a working group. So I think we need a multi-staged approach where we can take advantage of the opinions, but at some point, we've got to get it down to a more accountable process. And that's why I was thinking we should ask for an evaluation of the working group model to date. We may want to lay out some high-level principles to say it would be helpful if the evaluation could address the following.
Okay. Writing that down. Alex.
Yeah, thanks. I'm inclined to take the view Jeff has taken of saying we need to lay out some principles to be observed. And if I could cite one of the issues we dealt with at earlier calls was, for example, the implementation team that went on to affect or maybe affect policy or effect policy change. And we need to know how to deal with such situations, and we already gave some recommendations. Such principles, for example, could include how whatever group would be constituted, preserving certain core principles, you know, and to avoid the unpopular word of gaming, because we could make all the recommendations and some new team comes up and negates a lot of things. So I think there are certain principles. It's not to describe the group, but the principles that must be observed so that we can preserve the core principles which we are promoting. Thank you.
Thanks, Alex, and I think that's sort of where I was going with the comments, right, to preserve the I think the words you use, core principles, I think is important, and therefore you could allow the flexibility on structure, but make sure that things like the groups are representative, that it's not captured by one type of interest or. I'm sure there's a whole host of them. And in fact, I think the working group work team did a good job in, we can borrow some of those principles, even if you don't use a working group. I think that, Enrique, help me if I'm mischaracterizing, but I believe that group, in reading the report, did lay out some principles about making sure that a working group wasn't captured or making sure that the chair had taken different opinions and things like that. So some of those principles could be overarching principles for any type of group, committee, task force, whatever you use. Liz, you have on the comment, you said draft guidelines are written, so raising the concern now is timely. Are you referring to the work of the working group work team or?
Yes.
Okay. That's what I thought, but I just want to double check. So I would encourage, I think this has been a really good discussion. I think if we take some elements out of the discussion here, One of them was a call for an evaluation of the working group model in general. Certainly now that we've had experience over the past few years using working groups. I think a second recommendation I'm hearing coming out of this group is providing for a structure that may not be the working group model, but certainly providing a structure that's flexible enough for the council to elect to use different types of structures. I don't want to use the same word again. But maybe maintaining some core principles that we would need to develop or think about a little bit more to ensure that whatever mechanism is doing the work, that they agree to preserve, as Alex put it, the core principles. Does everyone kind of agree with those comments? Seeing Alan with a check mark and not hearing any...
I'm fine.
Good. Thank you, Marilyn. Okay, so then let's... I wanted to raise an issue that's come up. It's not on the list, but it's kind of one of those overall issues that I think is... I kind of wanted to discuss before we delve into some more real specifics, which is a kind of concept that's come through with the VI working group. And just to ask whether this is something we should consider, it may not be. So feel free to say, Jeff, too difficult, let's not consider it, or we have enough to do without considering those issues. And it was kind of discussed that some of you were on, I think, early. A few of us had this informal conversation, but I kind of want to formalize the issue, which is there are some that take the approach that the council, if something is not prescribed by the PDP process as written in the bylaws or rules of procedure, that anything not disallowed is allowed. And others take the view that, no, if it's not specifically in the rules of procedure or bylaws, then shouldn't do it. It shouldn't be done on an ad hoc basis. It's a real difficult issue. It's one that I think James had said before the call officially started that it's probably an issue that's hundreds of years old, if not more, in other parts of the world, but certainly in the United States on a number of topics. This is a constitutional issue in the U.S., so it may not be something that we could solve, or it may be something we want to offer opinion on, or basically say that if the council wants to do something different or a working group wants to be different, there should be a process to consider it. There's a whole bunch of ways we could take that. So I want to add that in as an issue for us to keep in the back of our minds when we draft these things. If there are certain things that we decide not to put in a final report, are we doing that because we are okay with that being done in the future or because it's our assumption that it won't be done? Very difficult issue, but one that
Jeff, I not having taken part in that earlier part of the discussion, some examples would be useful because very often exactly how we word it will imply whether you know, if you look at working groups, if we say thou shalt use working groups, then by not mentioning anything else, we are forbidding them. And yet a slight different change of wording can reverse that meaning. So I'm not quite sure I understand the kinds of issues you're talking about.
Okay, so the way this, one of the things that came up very recently, if you're following the VI working group, although it's actually more an issue for the council, was that the council, and again, I don't want to discuss the substance of the VI, so that's not at here. But the way it came up was that the council wants to pass a formal resolution to pass the interim report, to forward the interim report of the VI working group to the board. And there's a debate going on as to whether that's proper or within the PDP process. So it's never been done before that the GNSO Council has formally passed a resolution to forward an interim report to the board. In this case, it's being done because the board has a retreat in September, and the council wants to make sure that the board has that report for retreat and can review it and do whatever it needs to do for the new GTLD. So it's kind of being rushed through on that basis. But again, it's never been done before. Some have argued that, well, let me just present both sides. If people have an issue with that, please chime in. Some have argued that the PDP process does not provide a mechanism for the council to forward an interim report to the board and have argued, therefore, it's not proper. Others have argued that, well, there's nowhere in the bylaws that says that the GNSO council can't forward an interim report to the board, and so therefore they should be allowed to do it, and it's, after all, it's just the way they're the policy managers, and they've decided to manage the process by communicating with the board in that manner. Those are kind of the two sides. That's how it came up.
And I'd like to be in the queue. It's Marilyn.
Yeah, I'll do Marilyn, then Alan.
I'm first of all going to make a comment about history before I make a comment about this, Jeff, if I may.
Sure.
When we say something has never been done before, I'm searching my memory for the days when I was on the council. I think it is possible in the past that the council may have sent a communication to the board, calling their attention to work in progress without transmitting something in detail. I can't tell you my memory is all that good, but I think that is entirely possible. And if it happened, it would have happened during the time that Bruce was chair. So it's not a long period of time for the staff to search. So that's one point, and I'm not making any kind of a comment. What I'm thinking about is there were two periods when we were dealing with, I think it was called PDP-06, and then separately when we were dealing with the early stages of the GTLD process, and the council was working as a task force of the whole, there could have been a transmittal in the form of a letter without transmitting documents. I'm not saying there was. I'm just noting if staff is looking for precedent, they might look in correspondence for that. Because I do remember we had some discussions about, you know, informing the board. Now my comment goes to flexibility for the council to decide to transmit an interim report. In theory, if a resolution comes forward to the council, as I understand the council rules, they would have the ability to pass the resolution to send information to the board. My question would be, if a report is so interim, and I'm actually very familiar with the VI report, if a report is so interim, what we would have to be very careful that council is only transmitting awareness of work in progress, I think, as opposed to forecasting the outcome of a PDP process or a working group process. And VI is, somebody needs to correct me, I don't know the answer to what the right outcome is. VI is very much work in progress, is it not? It is a working group.
Yeah, so again, I kind of don't want to get into the details of VI, but I think the concept is any interim report is, by definition, a work in progress. And so I think, again, without trying to comment on VI because I don't want to do that. I think the question, and it was just an example of a debate going on where one side is saying that the bylaws don't allow for this to happen and therefore it shouldn't, where another side is saying that the bylaws don't prevent it and therefore it should be allowed and the council should be allowed to do something in that discretion. So I want to go to Alan, James, and Alex, but that's kind of the context in which I want people to recognize when we're drafting these things, that those are the types of debates that are going to go on from the work that we do. So let me go to Alan.
Okay, thank you. I have no illusion that this group or the PPSC or the council is all-knowing, all-seeing, and has wisdom which will last for the ages. I think we want to allow flexibility. We're doing it in a few places. For instance, when the current PDP says a report shall be out for comment for 20 days, we're now saying at least 20 days. And I think we need to build that kind of flexibility in. And I'll use an example that could have happened in VI. It's not, and it would not happen for a bunch of reasons. But imagine if the VI, if we knew the board was going to make a decision at their September retreat, and the VI working group and the council were uniformly of the opinion that this was the stupidest thing that ICANN could ever do, and because of the what has come up in our discussions, we want to caution the board to not do anything. And then there was unanimity that was the thing to do. I think that would be stupid to forbid the GNSO from formally telling the board that. Changing the details a little bit, one can come up with scenarios where there is an important message to send saying that we don't have closure, but this is where we stand right now. And, you know, and if you're going to make a stupid decision, at least base it on what we have discovered in the process so far. So I don't think we can imagine what's going to come out at the next one or what the scenario will be. And I think the answer is we should be as flexible as possible and not forbid things just because we didn't think of the possibility, unless we know categorically that doing such a thing would be absolutely dangerous and disastrous for the stakeholder group model or something like that. So
okay.
I ask for flexibility.
Right. So I think you're right that we're not all-knowing and all-seeing, and we can't foresee certain things. But I think we also need to keep an eye on, is flexibility, should we allow flexibility on everything? For example, you could change the facts, and would it be a good idea or not to say, here's our interim report board. We encourage you to make a decision on this report. We don't need to continue the process of the PDP.
If the working group and the GNSO believe that, then so be it.
Wait a minute, Jeff. I have to ask you a question. I do not, and this is Marilyn speaking, I do not think we in any way should be encouraging the board to abrogate a PDP process. I don't think that's a good idea for us. And my comment is not on, the idea that a interim statement goes forward and says for informational purposes, blah, 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 that's one thing. But encouraging the board to abrogate a PDP process is abrogating the role of the council.
Right. So with that, again, I'm trying not to comment on this.
I didn't think you said that. But, okay.
Let
me try to bring it to the point, and then without, again, trying to be – I obviously do have a very strong viewpoint, but I don't want to convey that. What I want to say is that that there's a point that Alan's making, which is that – and Marilyn, too, that there should be some flexibility. And what I'm asking people to think about when we go through these recommendations is, are there some areas that you think flexibility should be allowed, but are there some things that are so important to people that – no flexibility should be allowed for that particular element. And so let me go to, because James and Alex have been waiting patiently. Let me go to James and then Alex.
Hi, Jeff. Thanks. James speaking. And, the conversation may have passed me by a little bit, but I just want to reiterate that don't necessarily think this is something that we're required to wade into. I'm not really sure that something that we can make a lasting and positive contribution to, and I would guard against this group, this effort, being driven by whatever hot topic is occurring in the community. So I'll just leave it at that.
Thanks, James. I think that's a good point. Again, I, at the beginning, at the outset, I said, is this something we should even tackle? So, Alex?
Yes, Alex speaking. I will not go into the details of VI, but the little I know about it, it's one thing. I'm glad I'm not anything too close to VI. Now, my position is to give flexibility, but with it give responsibility for the action taken. And therefore, I want to look at it in terms of the process. And I ask the question, who originates the process of the interim, in this case of the interim report, or in future of a new situation? Now, I want to ask, is it the GNSO or the board? Now, if in my flowchart I find that if the board is the one that actually initiated, then I say it has oversight, it has authority, then I say it's okay. So the board requested for the interim report. But if the GNSO, then I would ask why would the GNSO be pushing an interim report? Now, I would then move ahead to urge that then the GNSO, if it wants to lobby for an interim report, they should ask the board to request it. They can lobby, they can do whatever they want, whatever they are, but then let the responsibility of asking for that new situation or the interim report be rested on the board, which will be accountable for the action of asking for it. So in this case, the interim report, but maybe any other new situation. So we look at the hierarchy in the organization and who will take higher responsibility, higher authority, and they can initiate, because then they should be considered to be the ones with the higher task in the flow of things. Thanks.
Thanks, Alex. I think that's an interesting report or interesting comment in that certain things may differ as to who initiated the PDP in the first place. Or I should say, instead of initiated the PDP, I should say initiated the request for an issues report. I think that's a good point. Something maybe that will determine flexibility on certain of these items. Any other comment on this particular issue?
Yep, I have one other comment that just to make sure I understand. I may have misunderstood two comments. One is, I actually thought Alex was saying that it also might depend, and Alex should clarify, that if the board asks for an update on interim work versus the council or a working group initiating, wanting to put forward an update on interim work. So that would be a question to Alex. I thought what you were asking us to do is to think about, while there's one example or maybe more, to think about what we put into the PDP process, about when reports are available and what status they have. And so I'm going to make a comment again historically. When I chaired the Who Is working group, we did provide, over a two-year period, we did provide interim reports publicly, but we noted that they were for informational purposes only, and we were not forecasting the outcome. Is that one of the things you're asking, is whether there should be flexibility? And I would just say in response to that is all the interim work of all the working groups is today always online.
Yeah, I think so it was an example. The overall question was, when we write this process, we gotta keep in mind that certain things we may want flexibility on, certain things we may not. We may want flexibility on everything. I think the specific issue that came up was something if something's not stated in the PDP process, does it mean it's allowed, or does it mean that it's not allowed? And that's a debate that's going on. Alan had asked me for an example, so this is the example that has just recently come up with, and so that was the real point of it. But I do think that some of the discussions that were on that particular example were very instructive as to I think it was instructive on that particular issue, as you pointed out, as Alex has pointed out, and Alan and others. So it was really for the overarching issue of flexibility as opposed to on a specific report.
Right.
So I think you know, one of the other let me go on to the next kind of general issue that the registrars have raised is on here. And James, if I'm not doing this justice, mate, or Paul, maybe you can help me. But the registrars had said that the PDP should be based on evidence of an issue to be addressed, or on a document that I'm trying to figure out how the summary was drafted here, but it should say a reasonable data-driven threshold for the introduction of a PDP is a necessary step. James or Paul, can you explain that a little bit more? Paul, you want to?
Thanks, Jeff. If I were the first one, and James will back me up, I'm sure. What this summary note is not including is the follow-on sentence, which said anecdotal evidence is should be insufficient to start a PDP. So what we're seeing here, the first comment, is sort of an overarching statement that the registrar stakeholder group put together, basically underscoring what we believe was already part of the recommendations, that there should be a push to provide as much documentation, evidence, et cetera, at the time of creation, and if there's nothing more than anecdotal evidence, that those sort of issues should never become PDPs.
So when you say shouldn't become PDPs, you're saying it's okay to do an issues report on it.
Right. Start gathering information. Don't jump straight to PDP. And I'll flog the dead horse, but the Fast Flux Working Group is a perfect example of something that was done, in our view, very, very backwards. There was a jump, despite everybody's warnings that we didn't have enough information, that we should do more research, there was a jump straight into a PDP, and we wound up burning almost 2 years of our time with very little to show for it.
Okay, and so to just push that a little bit, and then I'll go to James, are there certain, if we want to apply flexibility to that rule, are there certain areas where there should be flexibility on that rule? So if something was deemed to be urgent or, you know, a fear that doing a process, which in fact takes years, any flexibility on that?
Yeah, Jeff, I would turn it around. I don't think the registrar's statement is meant to be very, very limiting. Okay, I think in the context that it was provided, the impetus was we agree with the working group, what this working group has put forward, where there should be the efforts to provide as much information, background, et cetera. If there's some very important issue and there is no data and whatnot, but the community agrees, that's okay. You know, there's certainly flexibility to move into it. I mean, kind of strained for one of these examples where, you know, we feel that it's so important, but we have no data, nothing to point to. I think the registrar's point on, in general, is let's not allow in the future, let's not go down the path of jumping to a PDP when we only have anecdotal evidence.
Jeff,
okay.
Can I get you when you take one?
Yeah, I'm going to go to James, Allen, and then Marilyn.
Hi, Jeff. James speaking real quickly. Echo a lot of what Paul said. I don't know whether the registrar position was meant to be limiting or not. I think in some cases maybe it was. Because I think that, you know, from my perspective, a PDP is meant to solve a problem. And if a problem cannot be described in measurable terms, then I think any effort to solve it will be ineffective at best and possibly, you know, more harmful than otherwise left alone. And I think that, you know, some version of the Hippocratic Oath comes into play here. If you don't know how to describe a problem, then it's going to be very difficult to solve it in a meaningful way. But yeah, I think that, you know, this goes back to maybe making sure that we're using the issues report to examine issues and the PDP to address them, not using the PDP process to explore issues. Thanks.
Okay, thanks, James. I'm going to go to Alan and then Marilyn.
I think this issue is a lot like the Board Governance Committee saying stop doing task forces and use working groups. That is, it's addressing particular failures that we see without looking at the other side. We're building an awful lot of flexibility into this process in terms of timing to allow counsel, either counsel or the working groups, to do investigation and study prior to or after chartering a PDP. Ultimately, we've made a decision in ICANN that the GNSO should be a management group overseeing this, the overall policy development process. I hate to tell you, but management groups make stupid mistakes periodically, and nothing in the rules is going to change that. If we put rules in saying don't do a PDP unless we have specific things, we are sometime in the future going to not do a PDP on something that we should have, where it was warranted, even though we couldn't demonstrate with hard numeric facts what the issues were. It's a management process. We're going to have to assume that judgment of the people involved have some discretion for deciding, is this one to go with or is this one to pull back on? And I don't think we're going to fix it by rules like this.
Okay, again, so... Sorry. Marilyn, did you want to comment on this, or was it something else?
No, I'm commenting on this.
Okay, I'm going to go to Marilyn, then I'll go to James.
Okay, so I'm going to support everything that Alan said and add something, which was what I had originally intended to say. I have for long been a proponent of ICANN doing a better job on being the go-to place on understanding the statistics of what is going on in the DNS space. Facts can guide policy. So I'm going to say something positive about facts, but I'm also going to say that it's the obligation and responsibility of the ICANN process to help define those facts and not to just stonewall finding those facts and use the stonewalling concern on the part of ICANN. I'm not making a comment about any constituency. I'm making a comment about ICANN. If we don't identify those facts or the tendencies that are creating such a concern that there is a strong support for a policy, we're not self-governing. And if we don't self-govern, we're putting ICANN at risk. And most of you know that I work on behalf of business at the ITU, at the IGF, and elsewhere. ICANN is built on self-governance. And this is, I guess, a bit of a call to all of us to say we need to so I'm going to agree with Alan. You can't always know the facts, but you can certainly identify the trends. You can also, however, urge ICANN to do a better job of supporting the identification of the facts and helping to support fact-based policymaking.
Is anyone still there?
Oh, I'm sorry. I was on mute. I was going to James. Sorry. I was talking, and apparently nobody could hear me, and I was saying, James, we can't hear you. Okay, James, are you there?
Okay. Thanks, Jeff. And, you know, I don't want to belabor this too much. I know that within my company and within pretty much any company I've ever been exposed to, if you can't document a problem or substantiate an idea or an opportunity, it's really going nowhere. And I think that we have to recognize the finite and limited resources, both in terms of staff, time, and volunteers that we have to expend on these different ideas. We want to make sure that when a PDP gets underway, that it is targeted at those areas where we can do the most good. and not necessarily just being used to kind of as exploratory committees to find out whether or not problems or issues are real or actually occurring or they're just theoretical. So I guess it's just more of an effort, and you're probably going to get this from the folks who, you know, have to make sales to keep the lights on in their organizations. Is that we're always going to be driving in that direction because we feel like that, you know, produces the most effective outcome given limited resources. So, thanks.
Yeah. So let me just go back to our report, and you know, our report did say that we encourage the fact-based process. That we basically said that it should be based on facts, and so I don't think this statement is inconsistent with our already recommendations that we had. I think this is more written as a hard and fast rule. I think what Alan and some others have been saying is that I don't think, and Alan, correct me if I'm wrong, I don't think you're disagreeing with the notion that policy should be, PDP should be based. It should be a fact-finding process before the PDP is initiated, and that it shouldn't just be based on, ideas and notions. That you're putting more effort into the pre-PDP phase. But I think what you're saying is that it shouldn't be a hard and fast rule that says that if according to some, there's not enough evidence, you shouldn't have the PDP. Or am I misstating that?
I'll quote a line, and I don't remember who said it, but I can find out if anyone cares, that in the initial presentation of this, the term anecdotal evidence was used in a relatively negative way. And someone once said that the plural of anecdote is data. Sometimes all you can get is anecdotal evidence, because the hard evidence just is not available. And sometimes that's all you're going to have to work on. I don't think we should forbid it.
Okay. Alex?
Yeah, this is just a thought that has crossed my mind. I'm just wondering, does ICANN have something like a sort of a database where issues maybe are filed, no matter how few or rare they occur, and maybe with time they grow? And from that database, based on how they grow, they could increase to a certain extent or to a point where they could actually trigger PDP. Or do we have to wait for an issue until it's very hot, red hot, and then that's when they have got to be a lot of tag and push and pull? I don't know. I don't know if there exists such a thing. Or once certain issues are raised and they are not considered a PDP, they are trashed, or are they kept in a sort of a database? This is a question I'm actually wondering about aloud. Thanks.
Marika, you have a comment?
Yeah, this is Marika. And just to Alex's question, we don't have a database as such, but what we do sometimes benefit from in different working groups is data that's collected by the compliance team, because there are complaints that are logged online where people indicate what issues, they have issues with. And that's a tool where we sometimes look at, which areas get a lot of complaints, but there are a number of issues with that system as well, because often these complaints are self-identified. So, I might identify a problem, but if you dig deeper, it actually might not be that issue that's causing the problem. So it's not, you can't really call it a scientific database, but some working groups like the IRTP working group, have benefited from information provided by compliance on the basis of the information that they have gathered. And I think there are some process on the way to maybe improve that system, because I think from our point of view, it would be a helpful tool to see what issues, get a lot of attention or a lot of complaints at the compliance level, which might be an indication of where there are problems indeed.
Okay. So, James Paul, do you want to address Alex's comment about, do you think there's a threshold, or how do you measure whether there's enough evidence of an issue to address it? Alex said, is it just when it's hot, and how do you know that? Any guidance on that?
Well, that's a, you know, that's a good point, and I think that there's definitely an area where flexibility and discretion should be encouraged. I think that proceeding with a body of data will not only help inform the policymaking process, but also provide a success metric so that you can measure the policy outcome against the problem, you know, over time. As far as, you know, do 10 people have to have a problem before it's worthy of a PDP or 10 million? You know, I don't think that this group should be prescriptive in setting those thresholds necessarily. I think that it is well within its remit to expect that some measurements be taken prior to a PDP, but I don't think it should wade into what those measurements should be. And I'll let Paul comment on that if he has any other thoughts. But we're getting further and further away from, I think, what the registrar constituency intended in this comment. So I don't want to speak or, you know, build out that particular couple of sentences into something that it's not.
Okay, actually, on that point, then, can you just tell me how it's getting further away from that point? Because maybe then I'm missing it, and I want to make sure that we all understand fully.
I'll let Paul go. I don't think that the registrar stakeholder group was calling for an inflexible or a rigid policy development process. I think it was kind of expressing something that it had identified as a challenge and a problem, and something it wanted to see this group take up, and I think we have. And so, you know, I'll let Paul speak to this. Now I see his hand up.
Okay, Paul.
Yeah, James literally took the words out of my mouth. I'm sorry for the group if it's being interpreted as registrars demanding an extremely high threshold. That certainly wasn't the intention when I provided my input to this statement. Certainly not what I agreed to when the registrars came out. My view is very similar to what this working group has put together in its initial recommendations, that there should be the push, every effort should be made to develop the data, make sure that you can document, and et cetera. There will be cases where the data may not exist at the time of the initial launch, but there is this sense of the community that there is an important issue here, so we move forward. But again, you know, and maybe that's the problem with, and it's absolutely not a criticism of Marika's efforts, but, you know, when you summarize the comments, sometimes, you know, we lose the broader context that's there. And I guess it's just, again, repeating what James said, that we may be drilling far too much into what was said and creating a lot more than what was really there.
Okay, thanks, Paul. I appreciate that clarification. And actually, though, it kind of does go into the next statement that's in there from the registrars, which is I'm going to skip the kind of commentary at the beginning, but it just basically, I think the point is that not every issue that's raised to the GNSO should be the subject of a PDP, and that setting some reasonable boundaries about scope should be something that's done, I guess, is your point.
Yeah.
Which kind of, yes.
Can I get in the queue? And it's specific to this topic, and I'd actually like to ask James and everyone on the group a specific question about this.
Okay. Marilyn, shoot.
I'm actually in support of a statement that says not every issue that is raised to the council, and if I could put the word policy in brackets for just a minute. This is a question. I've looked at the bylaws. I've looked at the documents that have to do with restructuring, and everywhere I read, it says that the GNSO is about GTLD policy. So I'm going to raise an example, and because I do think that there's a broader issue of not every topic that comes to the GTLD in parentheses, policy council, since the purpose of the council is GTLD policy. So
So I'm not changing the name. I'm just using it to ask a question. We have topics that are coming up, and I'm going to give two examples. Counselors deciding to introduce a topic of Internet governance into the council. Councils deciding to introduce the drafting of terms of reference for a DNS search, which I think are broader ICANN topics. They're not GT limited. They're not only GTLD topics. So there is probably some benefit to capturing a concept that not all topics that are raised in the GTLD council either stay there or belong there.
So I think before we have everyone answer that question, because we are kind of running out of time, is it possible, Marilyn, that that fits into the, because here we're just talking about policy development, right, as opposed to all the other things that the council may take on. And I agree with you that that's an issue for the GNSO Council. But my point is that there is a part of this where there's supposed to be a determination made of whether the particular issue fits within the scope of the GNSO.
Right.
And is that, is your comment related to that particular issue?
Well, I think it is, but I think it's also generally related to, let's say that the council took a vote, hypothetically, and said DNS sec and DNS search, we want to do a PDP on DNS sec and DNS search. That, there's two issues there, I think. One is scope of the GNSO, but the other is, I mean, I'm assuming it wouldn't pass as a PDP, but to the comment that I think either Paul or James were raising is, do we all agree that not every topic that is raised within the GNSO or as a PDP automatically meets the scope and scope of GNSO test?
Mm-hmm. James, do you have a comment?
Yeah, really quickly, I think I understand the question. I agree, Marilyn, not everything that comes across the table at the GNSO Council level is warrants a PDP. I would say that I think this touches on a much larger issue that we probably don't have any time to delve into today if it doesn't involve GTLD policy, why is, ICANN diving into it? It's a much bigger topic, and, I'll just go ahead and drop out of the queue with that said.
I just need to ask you a clarification. I don't think you meant to say that ICANN is only responsible for GTLD policy. Right?
Well, what other areas does ICANN feel it's responsible for?
Well, there would be DNS. There would be security of the DNS. There would be the role of the root servers. There would be the role of scalability of the root. There would be the role of the ccTLDs. There would be IP addressing.
There's also numbers. One of the ends is numbers.
Fair point.
That was my only clarification.
Fair point. I was thinking more in terms of, when ICANN gets into things like, when issues are raised that touch on content or economic, interactions or things like that. But, yes, fair point. It's not necessarily GTLD policy.
Okay.
and on that note,
we were viewing that from two opposite extremes, so we met in the middle there.
Okay, on that note, I'm going to end the call, but what I will say is that there's going to be no call next week. A lot of people are on vacation as the last week of August. So the next call will be 2 weeks from today, which is September 2nd, if I'm correct.
Yep.
So that'll be the next call, and from there on, we're going to meet weekly. So if you could plan on September 2nd, and the 9th and the 16th and so forth. It'll be weekly at this time, and we are going to just remind you all that Marika and I will look into see whether there are days where we could send out a doodle for a longer session, for one half-day session or 3 or 4 hours on in September and one for October.
Yeah, that would have to be done on a fair amount of lead time, though.
Understood. So we're going to quickly look at that. I just want to make sure it doesn't conflict with other task force calls and other things that are going on. So we'll do that, and then we'll send out a doodle poll.
It almost certainly will.
Probably.
Unless you make it on Fridays, where ICANN tends to avoid meetings.
And I know Marika loves working on Fridays, so we might do that.
Or Saturdays.
I won't comment on that one, Jeff.
a wise move, Marika.
But it might be someone else supporting the group then.
All right, I will talk to you in 2 weeks.
Thanks, Jeff.
Thank you.
Okay, bye-bye.
Bye.